Hey folks, you're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with me, Dr. Donnie, and my good friend, co-host Chief Todd LeDuc, episode 139.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
All right, we're here to kick off another show. This is Dr. Donnie, and I'm here with my co-host, Chief Todd LeDuc, and also Chief Wellness Officer of LifeScan Wellness Centers. And Todd, I'll tell you, it's been such a privilege bringing on so many wonderful guests, and we have another great one. So let me kick that right over to you, and for you to take it and introduce our guest.
Thanks, Donnie. I appreciate it. It's always my honor to be back working with you and taping another episode. And we've got another, I'm sure it's going to be a fun interview on tap here today. I'm excited because it's a colleague, a friend that I've known for quite some time, worked with her closely at the International Association of Fire Chiefs on the Safety, Health, and Survival section. And she's in a relatively new role as fire chief. And I want to welcome Chief Joanne Rund on the show. And Joanne, thank you. I know we just actually came off a two-hour board meeting with the IFC, and we jumped right into the podcast. So thanks for the value of your time and joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's my honor to be here.
Thank you. And you know what? We always typically start off, Donnie reminds me all the time with the analytics. So we've got hundreds of listeners.
Hundreds and hundreds. Pretty soon. Hey, a few more of these will be it. We got to push to 1,000.
It's the power. It's the power of word, right? It's like social media. You start with one and next thing you know, right, you get thousands.
Some people say it's the power of positive thinking for me.
I like to attribute it to the great guests we have on. I mean, we certainly have had Joanne. We've had everyone from Lori Moore to Ron Sarnacki, and you know, we've had some folks like Bruce Varner going back to his time with Bruno out in Phoenix. So we've had a tremendous array of just talent, and folks have come on and shared their wisdom. But why don't we start with, not only do we have guests small around, or listeners small around the country, but internationally as well. So for those listeners that may not know you, why don't we start by just sharing kind of your journey, how you get into the fire service, and you know, where that has taken you to where you are today.
Absolutely. I'd be honored. I'm very humbled because you talk about Lori Moore Merrill, who is now the fire administrator, and Ron Sarnacki, the National Fall and Firefighters Executive Director. I've had the honor of working with both of them for many years as well, and they're just phenomenal people, and they have such a great vision for taking care of our fire service. So a little bit about me. I am currently the Baltimore County, Maryland Fire Chief, which I'm very honored to be in that role. I was selected to be a chief out of many different applicants that came through. In 2019, July 1st of 2019. So I just had my 3-year anniversary, which is very exciting.
Boy, that flies by. It seems like it was just yesterday.
Oh, it really does. It really does. So I came from a neighboring jurisdiction. I did 32 years in Howard County, Maryland, which is right next door. To give you a perspective of department size, my department that I came from was a department of about 500 career members. It's a combination department with about 600 or 700 volunteers over there. So 12 or 1300 personnel over there, combination. And then I graduated to a department of over 1,000 career members and over 2,000 volunteers. So as you can imagine, when I got here, it was like, woo! but they're wonderful people. Yeah. It's a great department. I'm so honored to be here and pleased to be able to do what I can do. So how I got here? Many, many years ago, and, you know, like I said, we're like, 35, almost 36 years in the fire service. So I got lucky. I had a cousin who came to live with us at my parents' house. And I was a hairstylist then. So you would never think a hairstylist going into the fire service, really. But my cousin was a volunteer fire station member down the street, and he would run out of the house all the time and head down and go to the incidents. And one day I just said, can I go see what you're doing? And then, of course, that was it. As we all know, once you're bit by that fire bug or that EMS bug, it just doesn't go away. You just have that need to serve all the time. And while I was cutting hair, I was telling my clients all about the incidents that I was on the night before, you know, and it occurred to me after a little while doing that, you know, I think I really like doing that more than I like cutting hair. I just had some really great friends at that volunteer fire station, and they said, hey, Howard County's hiring, you might want to try. And of course, at that time, never having been in a career fire department before, I'm like, oh, I could never do that. I can't run and do all those strong things that you have to do. I was a volunteer, so I could do it when I wanted to. I had somebody helping me. It just was completely different than what I had envisioned a career firefighter and EMS provider would do. It's not different. It's very much the same. And I had a false, presumption of what it would be, but started that 32 years ago or 36 years ago now in Howard County. And it was a wonderful career, an absolutely amazing, progressive department to work for. I had a lot of great chiefs that I got to work for. And was able to build a health and safety bureau in that department before I decided to try to become a fire chief elsewhere. So it took me 12 years to build that health and safety bureau, but I took that department from one safety officer to three on-shift safety officers, five on-staff administrative personnel, the gold standard NFPA 1582 physical. It was really an honor to be able to build that. And I was lucky enough to have fire chiefs that I worked for that believed in it, understood it, and helped me get it to where it needed to get to. And then the personnel that worked with me also believed in it. So it was really a team effort. I was lucky enough to have one of our paramedics that was also a nurse, and she really, really, really wanted to be involved with the medical portion of the program. So she really helped evolve that last portion of the medicals and became the liaison at the medical facility with the medical facility, and really helped build that link that we were missing, because we were with kind of almost an urgent care facility prior, and you would go in and have a new doc all the time, and the department really didn't have that connection that they need with that medical physician to keep them healthy. So we worked really, really diligently to build that and make that. So that was me in Howard County. Me in Baltimore County, very different department. I hope to get there one day with the medical physicals before I step away and move on to whatever my next adventure will be in life. But right now, it's just this department has been shredded over the years, literally. When I worked in Howard County, I knew it as a great department, an absolutely amazing department, big brother next to us. And then, when the economy started getting a little rough, they went through what's called a RIF over here. So a reduction in force, and they really shredded the department down. They took their six battalions down to three, and administrative staff, they cut that down to a quarter of what it used to be. So my vision when I came in here was I've got to get them back up to strength so that they can be the department that they once were. And we can be the department that it once was. And we've been pretty lucky. I have a great boss who very much believes in that vision as well. So it's great to have someone that you have to have somebody. It's so important to have somebody over top of you that believes in what your vision is, to help you carry that vision through. So very different vision, not just health and safety oriented. It has to be very umbrella oriented, and it has to encompass career and volunteer. And in our case over here, with a budget that's significantly less than what the budget was over in my previous department. And you kind of go, well, how does that fit? You were in a department of 500 career members and your budget was larger than what it is over here. Yes. Yes. Significantly larger. So, so helping them understand the budgetary dollars and why it's important to build that budget back up and get it where it needs to be to support this department. Facets, we brought on Facets to do a third party analysis we just finished, and we're so excited to have that to be able to substantiate what we've been talking about since I've been here about the needs. So that kind of gives you to where I am now. I also am lucky enough to serve as a board member with Safety, Health, and Survival section, as you said earlier, Todd. Very lucky to work with Ron Sarnicky and the team for the last 12 years. Honored to be with them with every facet of with the memorial, working with the families all the way through, working with an advocacy of the programs. I'm the Region 3 coordinator in addition to doing the board member stuff, and then also working with the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival section, most recently being able to attend in the strategic planning session of the IAFC was so awesome. Just so awesome. And then I've also been lucky enough to become a member of one of the Metro Chiefs this year too, because I oversee a Metro sized department. So lots of really, really good involvement all the way up to the national level. And I envision continuing that. And my goal is to foster succession planning underneath of me to help them understand the importance of that as well. So I hope that's what you were looking for. Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. You've got a lot going on, and I know they've got the right person for the job to, you know, you've had the perspective of where they were, where they are, and where they need to be. And it's certainly always a process, you know, in getting there. But, you know, your foray into the fire service was fascinating to hear. You went from cutting hair to the fire service. So almost, we just had our mutual friend and colleague, John Butler, on, who described his accidental hiring at Howard County after he just got out of the Marine Corps. So, and that kind of got me thinking though, when you talked about your transition into the fire service. And this is a curveball because I didn't tell you I was going to ask this before we started, but I know you'll have beautiful insights. So, you know, we continue to still be relatively, you know, a male dominated profession. You know, I think we have made significant inroads, at least during my tenure, and I'm sure during yours. I think the last numbers I saw out of NFPA was maybe 9%, somewhere right around there. Of the fire service are women firefighters. But having come up in the service 30 some odd years ago, when the numbers were drastically, probably half of that, if that, what just give some thoughts, especially for our women that may be listening to the podcast that are, you know, considering, you know, if a career in the fire service may be for them. And just talk a little bit about maybe the historical, how we've come and how much farther we still probably have to go, and any efforts that you see either within the departments you've been or nationally. You know, I've had the honor and privilege of being a speaker at Women in the Fire Service conference right in Fairfax, I believe, that year. And they do great work in mentoring and in developing. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts from a firefighter that's come up through the ranks and is now chief of a large metropolitan combination department.
Yeah, so being a woman in the fire department is it can be challenging. It can be significantly challenging. It seems like every step along the way, you were proving yourself again at what, you know, at the firefighter level, at the lieutenant level, at the captain level, at the chief level. And it wasn't until I became a fire chief that I realized it wasn't just the women, it was also the men that are having to prove themselves at that level. It just seems so much larger for me at that time. And I think it was the intimidation factor of stepping into the new role. So the one thing that I have found is that the women that I work with are very dedicated, and they're very focused on making sure they provide a good service to the citizens. But not only that they are also strengthened and they are well skilled enough to stand next to their male counterparts and not put anybody at risk. So they're very, 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 very diligent about that. And the one thing I would say to anyone who may want to be in the fire service, there are so many resources out there for you to look into, to become a part of, step into a volunteer fire station or what have you, and essentially see whether or not that atmosphere feels like what you like it or want it to be, because we're very much a family. And it's a family atmosphere, and we joke around with each other, we goof off with each other, we see each other at the worst of times and the best of times, and we bring a whole lot to the table as women. And I think it really helps us well round our workforce. And what I've seen from when I first came in, to be honest with you, my class, which as I said, I came into a very progressive department, had 5 women in it in our academy class. And our academy class was size of 11 people.
Wow.
So it was almost half that class.
That's trailblazing back then.
Yeah. And Howard County is, you know, it's a combination system that you have to be cross-trained. It's not an option to be EMS or fire. It has to be both when you're coming in the door. So that's a rare find, is to find a department that would be hiring a full class that size and half of it be women. But they were very focused on diversity and bringing in the right people for the job, et cetera. So today, I work for a department that has EMS and fire split. However, when I came in, I made it very clear that every firefighter that we hired had to have EMT as well, because the majority of what we do now is EMS. So I can't have people out there that are not trained to the utmost in EMS training when the majority of what we do is EMS. So, and I find that we're doing really well with getting women in. However, you cannot ever fall down on your recruitment and retention efforts, because the minute that you do, then you might lose a side of an audience. So you've got to be very, very diligent on that and very purposeful on your focus efforts. Every aspect that you possibly can. I talk to my police partners as well. The police chief and I here are very close with how we work together. And she's, you know, the police department is struggling just as much as the fire department is with regards to recruitment and diversifying. So go ahead.
Yes, Chief. When it comes to women in the fire service from a work-life balance perspective, you know, because first of all, my work-life balance, it's all around health and wellness is foundational. Got to have that. Or, you know,
sure.
Got to have that. But when it comes to the women, such as the women that perhaps are mothers in your department, do you feel that there's still a difference in the home life responsibilities when it comes to male, female? Do your women feel like they, you know, they're it's not a 50-50 split of the home responsibilities, that they also are shouldering a majority of those, or is it starting to equal out?
That's a great question. And it's kind of interesting because I find that a lot of the women almost fall into the female role in the fire station as well, with the caring piece of it, with, you know, how we tend to try to care for our families. We tend to also care for our fire department families or our EMS families in the station. So I think it has expanded our role as women and just our natural approach to how we take care of people. And I have to say, so I have a very supportive husband at home, and he calls himself the pool boy right now because he is retired and living his life very well at home, taking care of the pool and the dogs, etc. Now, his original job was going to be to actually take care of my mom. Unfortunately, she passed very shortly after I got hired. So that was our vision. When I got this position, he was like, you know, it's your time to stand up and to shine and to do what you need to do. And I'm going to take care of the house and you do what you need to do. And he has very much done that for me. And thank goodness, because I'll be honest with you, the workload that comes with a position of at this level, there's no way I could have ever done that and stayed sane. so, but the thought's always in my head, right? Because that's what our nature is as women, is caretakers and making sure that the family is good to go. We have our grandkids over for this week, as a matter of fact, our older grandkids, they're in their teens. And I am constantly thinking about, okay, when can I get home to make sure that I get to spend some time with them while they're there, you know, this week. And you know, one of them even said to me, Grandma, this is like the least amount of time I've ever seen you when we've come over for a week. And I have to explain to him, I'm in a new role. I have a lot of responsibility, you know? So yeah, I think we shoulder more, but I think it's us who shoulder more versus society putting more on us. I think it's just who we are. That's my perspective on it anyway.
I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Great perspective. And I'm glad your husband's getting to enjoy retirement as well as you, you do the good that you do. And, you know, I'm going to throw another unscripted question at you, which I hate to do, but you kind of led me right there with one of your last comments. You know, you mentioned the word sanity and maintaining sanity. You know, the fire service, and you know this, I mean, being involved with the foundation and been 36 years in the service and safety, health, and survival, you know, behavioral health is always, you know, been a key component of wellness and overall wellness of our members. And I think, you know, now so maybe even more than ever, I mean, the stressors of the pandemic, what seems to be the increasing polarizing, you know, of the country. You know, some would even say maybe lack of first respect for first responders. Can you talk a little bit about, especially, you know, you built out a beautiful model health and wellness program that I got to learn a little bit about when you were in Howard. But can you talk a little bit about the importance of behavioral health support in what that means in a department, especially from the fire chief's perspective, in terms of making sure that the right resources are there and we provide kind of a safety net? Because, I mean, inherently, this job brings tremendous, as we all know, tremendous stressors. You know, you're going to see things you wish you never have saw and respond to emotions you wish you probably never had to deal with. But talk a little bit about that on from the perch of your new role.
Absolutely. So it's actually a whole different view that I never even thought about, to be honest with you. So being in the health and safety officer role before, of course, I'm focused on the smaller programs and making sure that we get some education out to our personnel and everything. But now at the fire chief role, I'm seeing what the impact of the mental health aspects are having on our personnel. So higher alcoholism, higher use of drugs, higher you know, personnel that just can't deal. They're going off to the center of excellence, and they're really, really struggling. So one of the efforts that the police chief and I put forth very, very beginning was trying to make sure that we had the mental health support from our personnel, for our personnel, and as available to them as the Cortico Wellness app. So they have an app that's on their phone. I have it on my phone, and essentially it provides them the opportunity to, I was trying to see if I could pull it up for you.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I have work life balance videos in the app. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I filmed for those guys. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that was one of the very first things that we went after when, COVID funding started coming. And now the police chief has been lucky enough to actually get a counselor on board. And then they also have a crisis intervention group. We've expanded our peer support group probably times two. Since I came on, and only for the fact of, and changing it from the model of CISM to peer support. So, and getting that stigma away from it, that we're going to force you to sit down and talk. We're going to be available for you. Here's your team members that are available, so you can pick who you feel comfortable speaking with. But honestly, constant education with them. I do stress first aid with the rookies when they first come in the door to let them know, you know, you've got to take care of yourself. You have got to have that work-life balance, if you will, that is very hard to do when you're in the training academy and you're in there for 8 hours during the day, sometimes 10 hours, and have to come home and study. And then you have a family to take care of. Oh, you have your meal to make. Oh, you have your uniform to iron. Oh, and then you got to get back up and be there at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. So so it's extremely, extremely important that we touch base with our personnel and communicate with them on a regular basis. And what we've instituted here in our department is a first in kind of touch base, a first in transition, and it's a WebEx kind of version. And our chief officers check in with their company officers. Everything good? Your people doing okay? Any struggling? Anything like that? Then we help to try to get them to resources. EAP. We have several different locations around us. We're lucky enough to be close enough to the Center of Excellence, where we bring them in, do education with our personnel, and just kind of try to keep a closer touch with how they're doing. And then a briefing with our chief officers to make sure that they're touching base with their shift and noticing any type of behavioral changes that might be out of the ordinary, like the person is eating lunch in their ambulance or their fire engine versus with the shift any longer, which, you know, after COVID, it's really, we've had discussions, we've dropped a lot of people. Staff-wise, we've had a lot of retirements, a lot of people leaving the department because of what they saw, what they experienced. You're right, there's a change in attitude towards first responders. I have an uptick right now of assaults in my ambulances. And as soon as we find out one of those happen, I make contact with my personnel. Every single one of our people that is hurt, every single one of our personnel that has an incident or is involved in an accident or whatever in the department, I reach out to them and I call them personally, check in with them, let them know it's okay for them to ask for help. You're not going to get in trouble. We're going to get you help. We're going to get you taken care of, whatever your issue is. So I think it's really, really important. The message comes down from all the fire chiefs or the department heads, if you will, because some are not fire chiefs. Some are just emergency services department heads. And it's important for them to send the message to their team that their mental well-being is just as important as their physical well-being. Because if they're not together here, they're not going to perform well out there. So
yeah, that's some great, resource Cortico, some great just advice and knowing your people. You know, it's been my experience, and as I'm sure yours, when there was something that was struggling. Typically, at least some members of their house knew that that was going on, but maybe they didn't know or weren't comfortable with trying to connect the dots to get them help. So having programs like the peer support, stress first aid. We just had Gary on from the First Responder Center of Excellence on the podcast this week. And he was talking about all the resources that they have on their website. So for our listeners out there, great opportunity to find some of these programs if you're not already doing peer support or stress first aid or behavioral screenings. Even I know Joanne and I were on IFC, and sadly, still a lot of annual physicals don't include any type of behavioral health screening. And just like cancer or cardiac, if we screen, we can intervene early and prevent tragedies. So, personalizing leadership by actually touching your people and talking to them, making sure that they're comfortable knowing that it's okay not to be okay, speaks volumes. So, I promised you we'd probably run about a half an hour or a little bit over that. And I know you have a busy day and you've been on the go nonstop. So I want to bring it in. We're obviously certainly between Donnie and myself want to have you back on. Donnie does his own podcast on work-life balance on Mondays. And then we do this jointly on Thursdays. So we'll have a Chief Run 2.0. Hopefully we can get your schedule corralled again. And, but I did tell you, so you should see this coming. You've had a lot of life experiences personally and professionally. So for our listeners that are out there that maybe are either just getting started or thinking that they want to have a career in the fire service, if you had to, and I know this is probably very difficult because I'm going to ask you to, if you had to pick one pearl of wisdom to give to those coming up behind, what would that be?
So I'll start with the new people coming in. How's that? Those that are just stepping into the role or just taking on their career, it's hard to say, map out what you want to do in your life as an emergency services provider. But the one pearl of wisdom that I will give you is just do the best you can in whatever role you take throughout your career. Set yourself a plan, stick to it, and don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it because you dictate your future, no one else.
That's my pearl of wisdom. No, I think that applies in all aspects of our life, right? It's that's great insight and wisdom, whether you're talking personal or professional. So great guidance, great insight. Chief, it's my honor and privilege to call you a friend and colleague and serve with you on IFC. And I appreciate you taking time out of what I know is a very busy day and schedule. And thanks for who you are and what you do.
And you as well, Todd. It's my honor. All right. And Donnie, very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. All right. Thank you, guys.
Stay safe.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balance program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.